Welcome to the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew. I'm a teacher, a librarian, a writer, and a fan of kids. So many things have the potential of going wrong in the process of crafting a picture book. It's what, for me, makes it so special when you come across a picture book that works so well. When the art feels frameable, and the color palette feels wearable, the text feels singable, and the message, when the message feels palpable, when it all comes together and works in tandem and just works, that's some picture book magic at play. Today I welcome Britt Gandolfi and Amanda Romanek to the podcast. Britt and Amanda's debut picture book, Look Up, Fontaine the Pigeon Starts a Revolution, tells the story of Fontaine, a small pigeon who is fed up with the world's addiction to technology. Let's step into my conversation with Britt Gandolfi and Amanda Romanek. Ready? Here we go.
So hi, I'm Britt Gandolfi. I'm a mom, a recent law school graduate, and the author of Look Up, Fontaine the Pigeon Starts a Revolution.
Hi, I'm Amanda Romanek. I am an illustrator, the illustrator for Look Up, Fontaine the Pigeon Starts a Revolution. And I am also a mom and a part-time barista. I'm a coffee mom.
I would love to dig in a little bit more about Britt, your background as an author, Amanda, your background as an illustrator. But first, why don't we give folks a chance that haven't encountered this book yet to know a little bit about what it is. Britt, how would you describe the story of Look Up to a new to this book reader, whether they are kid or grown up? What is Look Up?
Look Up is a story about a small pigeon trying to make a big difference. It's a classic Aesop's fables for our urban landscape about birds being really mad at us for being on our cell phones and for being so distracted. And so one particular pigeon decides to rally a cohort of birds, and they reach out to humanity the only way they really know how. And they have a special day of action with the intention of waking us up and getting us to live more in real life.
Can I ask, are we keeping the only way they know how spoiler territory or out of
it? No, we can tell.
I'm comfortable with both.
Birds poop on the phones. I mean, like, spoiler alert.
Oh, yeah. There is poop. Chat.
Yeah.
It's poop in this
poop book. It's a poop joke book that's a Trojan horse for a conversation about screen use.
Ooh, that is such a great tagline. It's a poop joke book. It's a Trojan horse for a conversation. I love it. That's fantastic.
Yeah. It's an urban legend. It can come into your house, and pretty soon your children will be telling you to put your phone away, or a bird is going to poop on your screen. Because that's what's happened in my home, at least with my child. You know,
I've had that.
Oh, she threatens me regularly. She's like, "You see that bird, Mom? That bird wants you to get off your phone." So we invite you to bring this urban legend to your home and see what happens with screen use conversations.
Did you create the book with readers in mind? Were you thinking about you said you were pregnant when you met. Were you thinking about your soon to be housemates in that way? Sometimes we also just create books for us. I don't know. Were you thinking about specific readers when you were making and when you were illustrating, Amanda?
It was both. It was both. When I was illustrating it, I was thinking about just really creating a world that would be immersive and fun for the readers. And I knew those readers would be both parents and children. And I really wanted them to kind of be reminded of how wonderful it is to go outside and play, to be a part of the world. And so that's kind of what I was thinking about when I was illustrating it.
I wrote it for me because I was a new mom, totally addicted to my screen. Like, Amanda and I would do like Netflix with our kids and chill. You know, we'd sit there, we'd hold our babies, you know, we'd be feeding our babies, and we would have a phone in the other hand. And Amanda and I both grew up in the 90s and born in the late 80s. And so we didn't get smartphones until our late 20s. So when we were moms in our late 20s, I don't know why I never calculated for the fact that technology would become a part of my parenting world. I never imagined breastfeeding my baby and looking at a screen. The juxtaposition of being a new mom and then simultaneously realizing, wow, I'm kind of addicted to checking my phone, became a weird issue for me. And I remember bringing it up to Amanda because she was also a new mother, and we were laughing about the irony of holding our babies and then looking at photographs of our babies while we're holding our babies. And she said, I just wish a bird would just come and poop on my screen, and then I would wake up and I would never stare at it unless I needed to again. And I was like, Amanda, what if all of the birds are furious at us? What if all the birds on this power line are just all waiting to poop on all of our phones because they think that we need to wake up? And we went home after a walk, and I wrote the book on my notes app on the phone. As like kind of a song for me. And we've been singing this song in our house for like 6 years.
Yeah.
Do you have the book in front of you? Do you mind sharing it is a sing songy rhymey text. Do you mind sharing an excerpt of it just to give us a sense of what you mean, Brett?
Everyone was looking down, all around, faces faced the ground. People tried to look up, but when they did, their heads got stuck.
Do you want your guitar?
Oh, no, we can't. Well, there's a song coming out on April 30th that we're getting produced by a local country band down here that will be a fully mastered, fantastic Louisiana country track. It's the Brits version.
Wow. Could we include an excerpt from that?
I don't know if
it's actually going to be in the email inbox by tomorrow morning. So yeah, we can.
Oh, that's amazing.
Listeners, through the magic of editing, I now present to you an excerpt of the Look Up song.
They decided each time they saw a screen that they let loose a little natural stream, you know. It started one day like all the others. The pigeons were on power lines and babies with mothers. Then one mom looks down to her screen. She had to look up. She heard the most bizarre scream. Viva la revolution! A pigeon cried, and then the poop rained down from the sky, from the French Quarter down. Car line, one single clean screen you could not find. For every time someone looked down, a glob of bird poop took that.
Yeah, so it is a poem, but it started off as a song, and it'll live as both the poem and the song. Music is a big part of our family, and yeah, it's funny. It was a poem about getting off your phone that was written on a phone.
Yeah.
But now, live with Amanda's incredible illustrations, which is just more than I could have ever imagined it being.
So if you don't mind, let me make a personal connection to you in the way that this book was created in that way, or rather the way that you were just of the right age that smartphones became what they were at the same age that you were becoming moms. I was born in the early 80s. I was born in 81. And as a librarian, school librarian is my job, we have seen our profession change with every single generation. Librarians are radically different. When I was in school, you went to the library to do research because that's where the answers were. And as a librarian, my kids, all of us, have access to all of the answers, and my job now has shifted to helping sift through all the noise to find what's relevant. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah.
I love that in this way, then, you had this meta creation of a book, that you're writing a book to say, we're wasting time so much on phones. This is it can be a potentially really bad thing, but your method of creating reinforces why these are great tools for us to have. The problem is that they're the greatest distraction tool at the same time of being the greatest creation or access tool. I love that you shared that. I'm really grateful you shared that.
It's an ironic point of it, but I mean, I hope that this book inspires millions of conversations about what are the pros and the cons, and how can we use these tools for the things that we need to use these tools for. I mean, we've never been so connected, we've never had so much access to information, but are we using it to improve our planet and our community and to create healthier and happier lives for ourselves and the ones we love? Or are we using it because we're feeling isolated or lonely or disconnected from our community? Like, are they bringing us closer together? Or are they pulling us further apart? And I wrote Fontaine at a time where I knew that if I didn't immediately address my screen use, that my phone was going to pull me apart from my own child. And so, it's a joke because I think we all suffer with some level of digital distractedness. And I'm a big believer, we don't change things, by being shameful or judgy. So a joke about birds pooping on our phones maybe is the icebreaker we need to kind of talk about how much they have changed us.
I think also giving us readers a chance to imagine that for all we think about other animals and what is going through animals' minds, that there might actually be something going through their minds about us is a really fun thing to play. Amanda, we got to talk about you for a minute, or for maybe more than a minute, because your art in this book is gorgeous, and not just your line work, but your palette is, oh, it's fantastic. You know what it looks like to me? It looks like, again, I work in a school. And it looks like a wonderful set of, like a well-worn set of oil pastels. Do you know what I mean? Like, can you picture the box that are worn, that are all like different nubs? That's what it looks like to me. It's a really wonderful, again, color palette that you used for this book. I'd love to hear a little bit more about where you come from in terms of illustration. You called yourself an illustrator, which I love that you're not just an artist. You have this focus of how you like to make art. Tell me a little bit more about being an illustrator, and in particular, what it meant for you or what it means for you to make art for children, because that's a different audience than what most people make for.
Well, I started drawing when I was very little, as most people do. Humans, we all do that. I think we all draw when we're little. But my teachers, when I entered kindergarten and public school, just saw that the level of detail I was putting into my work was different. They wanted to see if I could test into an art program that we have here in Louisiana, called the St. Tammany Parish Talented Art Program. And at the time, I was the youngest to ever test into the program. Now, there have been kids that were in kindergarten who have gotten in the program since, but
Kindergarten.
I was the first person to open the door. It's cute. It's funny that you said that the color palette looks like oil pastels, because that was my first medium, was oil pastels when I was a little kid.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, so I had all these like little oil pastel drawings, illustrations, paintings, whatever you'd like to call them, that I won awards for. And when I was in second grade, I did a piece that won the award at the school art show, and it's still framed and hanging up in the principal's office to this day.
Wow.
But I've been actually illustrating books since I was a little kid, not published books, but I had been doing this for a while. I did my first one when I was, I think, in kindergarten, then I did another in second grade, and then I did a book in fifth grade that I literally sewed together, made the card cover, everything,
Yeah.
had the book jacket printed, the whole shebang.
Wow.
And right before I illustrated this book, Britt has not heard this story, but I had just moved to my parents' house in Folsom, Louisiana. And this was, I don't, what year was it? 2020?
2022?
No.
23? 23?
No, I moved here
Oh,
in,
2020. Yes, you
yeah.
moved here in
So it
2020.
was right at the pandemic. And I opened up my closet, and in my closet was the book that I had made in fifth grade. And Britt had just been asking me, Amanda, we have to illustrate this book. We've got to do it. And I was telling her, now's not the right time. It would be kind of tone deaf to put this out during the pandemic. But I picked up that little book that I had made, and I was just like, yes, I am, I need to do this. At the right time, of course, but I need to illustrate this book. People say, well, what do you want to be? And I guess I was going through a little bit of a reassessment of what I wanted to do for a living, because I had been working as a graphic designer and I had been working as a fine art painter. And then I was just a stay-at-home mom for a really long time. And you kind of go back, you say, well, what did I want to do when I was a child? And they say, it's the thing you're supposed to do is the thing you do without even realizing it's special.
Hmm. Oh,
and
here
I am, like, sitting in my closet surrounded by all these books I made when I was a child. And I was like, okay, I went to school for illustration. I went to school for sequential art, which is comic books.
Say for sequential art, yeah.
And I went to school for illustration. And because I had done so much work in both of the majors, I have a degree in visual communications from the Savannah College of Art and Design. But that was kind of like the backstory to how I've been doing this for so long. And it's always kind of, I don't know, been the thing that I did that I didn't realize was I was doing, that I didn't realize was special, or that I didn't realize was unique.
That's great.
The moral is, don't give up on your dreams, kids. You never know, you know, the dream that you had as a child,
maybe
published, you know,
maybe it's that you always were. But you were gonna be. You always were. But
we are our dreams.
We are.
Yes. Yeah.
But when I was illustrating the book, oh, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, you talk about sequential art in comics, but in the library we also talk about sequential art in picture books, because what is a picture book but a page turn is just a panel. In that way you're just talking about 32 panels, or I guess in some cases some picture books actually are paneled. But yeah, that background, it didn't surprise me as you were sharing that story to have that background in making books.
Yes.
Means that you know about pacing a story or spreading the text across, you know, 32 pages in order to make sure that you can capture the right moments through illustration, and also tell the story with art alongside words. We always are watching for, you know, the books that make a picture book exceptional in its format are the ones where the art is essential and the words are essential, and together they tell something that neither does on its own.
Yeah. Well, what's unique about Amanda and I as creative partners is that we conceptualize this idea of a book together. And while I wrote the poem, and Amanda's definitely got some lines and, you know, edits that, you know, have made it to the final rendition, by the time we were, you know, lucky enough to find a literary agent and have the book, you know, purchased from a publishing company, we had been talking and dreaming about this book for about 6 years. Amanda already had ample amounts of character sketches and designs. I had already had the entire poem broken down into story blocks with illustrator notes that we had collaborated on.
Yeah.
So we really came to the publishing process as like, thank you for finding us. We were out in the cold with this masterpiece. And thanks to you, it will. You know, and we, you know, it's rare. I feel like it's rare for someone to write a children's book, for it to be published, and then for their best friend and creative partner to be the artist.
Yeah.
For it, but because we have that personal relationship, we were really able to have a very robust creative dialogue over what was the best presentation for Fontaine, you know.
Right. Like when I created Fontaine's character design, you know, the little red orange hat is a throwback to the French revolutionaries wearing the red hats. There's little things like that. His personality is actually kind of like Britt's personality when I draw him, because the poem doesn't talk about these characters and their personalities. So I tried to put it into the illustrations. And so they all have their own little personalities. They stand out. And then the color palette for the book was actually inspired by the city of New Orleans. Mm. It's most of the color is inspired by the sunsets here.
Yeah.
And pretty much every page, if you look at it, it's the color palette is trying to show you something about the time of day that you're seeing in the story. So on the first page, it's the early morning. Then it kind of goes through the day a little bit. The colors get a little brighter. They get, they start to turn kind of like golden and green as the day goes on. They become more peach tones as the sun is beginning to set. So that is also, that was part of where the color palette came from. In the book, it's, I'm showing you the time of day. I'm trying to show you, I want you to kind of like imagine what it feels like to be there. I want you to look at it and go, oh, I can tell what temperature it is outside.
Yeah.
I want you to feel like you can hear the buzzing of the lights in the tree or just little things like that.
Well, and also, Amanda, that we are on our screens from sun up to sundown as it is, right?
Right, yeah.
There's also a nod to the blue light. There's a couple of depictions. Yes. There's a couple of stories. Yeah. There's that blue.
They're kind of washing that blue.
That glow you get on your face when it's a little, you know, dark outside, either early morning or at night. You get that glow from the
phone,
from the mirror of the phone. Yeah,
yeah. We've got a lot of blue light stuff. When you see a person with blue or teal on their face, like in this picture, that's the phone blue light.
The blue light from the phone. Yeah.
There are a lot of little things like that in the book.
Got on. There's another spread where you just have like a lot of glowing blue faces. I know this is an audio podcast, but
that's my favorite spread.
Like that spread.
Yeah.
What's that bizarre scream?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
That's me with the guitar. Amanda drew me in.
Oh. Yeah. Hey, Britt, can I ask you what's the significance of the name Fontaine? Just a name that felt like the right name, or is it related to something?
There's a couple of things. First of all, Fontaine was Amanda's idea. She said, we need a character named Fontaine. It's a French name. It's French for fountain. You know, I like to think of Fontaine as, you know, not your average pigeon. He's a fountain of compassion and he wants to find his place in the larger society. He's not just concerned with making sure he gets enough to get by. Fontaine's really thinking about what kind of part he wants to play. And, you know, the book is set in New Orleans, and we have a huge influence of French culture, but also Spanish culture. If you'll notice, Viva la Revolution is Spanish, and it's kind of a nod to our French and Spanish colonial history in Louisiana. But Amanda came up with Fontaine, and I was like, great, I love Fontaine. He should be a pigeon that starts a revolution.
Yeah.
And then we tried to figure out what that revolution would be, and then a couple of days later, Amanda was like, a bird should poo on my phone. I was like, Fontaine the pigeon should poop on your phone. And she pooped on all of our phones.
Yes.
In fact,
it
forever.
Because we were like, what's Fontaine's revolution going to be? And it happened. Yeah. Well, it's obvious.
I was going to go for single-use plastics. But then we realized that the screen is a little bit more pertinent and affecting us.
Well, but, another animal, another day, Britt.
Another animal, another revolution, another day.
That's right.
Yeah, so Fontaine came from our connection to the city of New Orleans, our memory. And this all comes right back around to the phone thing again, where we were sitting around talking about how what we expected our children's like childhoods to be like were more like ours. And we both have these fond memories of going out into the city, and there was music on every corner and dancing, and it was magical to be there. And we were talking about this and how the city, it's not the same anymore.
It's a little different.
It's very different from the way that it was when we grew up. And we kind of also wanted to capture that magic that we experienced as children and put it back into the book. And a lot of the local people here that have read it pick up on those things. And it's really heartwarming. For them, I had a family of local New Orleanians look through it, and they were just in love with it. They were like, oh, I know exactly where this is. Oh, I can remember being dancing here. And it's bringing those memories of just connecting with one another and having a good time when we weren't so distracted. I feel like that's one of the important little tricks of the book.
Well, one of the good things about being from the South is that we are a very open culture, you know, like in terms of being like polite and kind. I mean, of course, we have some really deeper issues down here beyond our surface level Southern hospitality. But I was really dead set on making sure the book was set in New Orleans to sort of reinvigorate a conversation around why aren't we making small talk in the grocery store? Why are we in an elevator of crowded people and nobody wants to make eye contact with anyone around them? Because I imagined and remembered being a child growing up in Southeast Louisiana and in New Orleans. And it's a very genial, like, hey, my baby, hey, honey. Like, we are all like in your personal business. And as screens have taken over, there's more of a feeling of isolation in the public sphere, you know, at a march or a second line, or, you know, the things that we do as Louisianians that take us outside.
Well, Brett, I would even argue that if we, you know, kids are growing up on devices because that's the world that they're growing up in. That's what technology looks like now. So it really, in that way, maybe unfairly, puts a pressure on them to pressure us to get off our phones. Where if we can take that turn, we adults can take that turn and connect more and be distracted less and be present more. Then we can help raise a bunch of kids too that know, like, no, it feels good to connect with people. Totally great to be on your phone. You can write books on your phone and record music on your phone. Do all these great, connect on your phone in ways that we wouldn't be able to connect from such great distances. But also look at this beautiful city we're in. Look at these beautiful people that are around us. Look at the beauty of each other, where we are and the way we connect. That's good. I like it. It's good. It's a good thing to write a book for young readers and their grown-ups alike, for the people that will read to them. It's a really great thing you both have done. Well done. I'm glad LookUp came across my desk.
I'm so glad it did too. It's definitely for the parents. People are like, what age group is this for? Like,
everyone.
Well, it's for everybody.
Everyone. It's a picture book. It's for everybody.
Publisher says it's for 5 to 7. However, if you are someone that knows anyone who might be looking down too much, or, you know, if you have someone that has a child in their life and you're like, wish that kid was a little less on the screen, a little more outside, this is a great little gift to just send a subtle message to anyone you love that you want them to look up. And we should all try to look up more. And like the last line of the book says, you know, keep your phone in your pocket and your eyes up and wide.
Yeah. Thank you both so much for your time. I want to ask you, I close every episode by asking this, that I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Britt, I wonder if there's a message that I could bring to them from you.
I would love for you to ask them to imagine what we did before we had phones, and to talk about whether or not they were having more or less fun. draw a line in the cosmic sands of time. Pre-smart. Take the children all there on your magical school bus and ask them to imagine what the playgrounds were like.
We'll do that. And Amanda, same question. I'll see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message I can bring to them from you?
A long time ago, I was told that all of us are artists, and that one of the things that makes us artists is that we can find beauty in everything. So I would say to look around and talk about what you see that is beautiful in your surroundings. What little things around you are beautiful to you? Because we all have that ability to see beauty in everything.
Thank you to Britt Gandolfi and Amanda Romanek for joining me on the Children's Book Podcast. You can pick up your own copy of Look Up, Fontaine the Pigeon Starts a Revolution, wherever books are found. Consider supporting independent bookstores by shopping through bookshop.org. You can also use my affiliate link by clicking on the book's name in our show notes. Our podcast logo was created by Duke Stebbins. Our music is by Poddington Bear. Podcast hosting by Libsyn. You can support the show and buy me a coffee at MatthewCWinner.com. And on that note, be well and read on.